Ehud Olmert says Israel knows that militant groups continue at every moment to look for opportunities to carry out attacks. Police say the suicide bomber killed 9 people and wounded dozens. Palestinian officials say Israeli aircraft fired missiles at a metal workshop in Gaza City. The Israeli army said the target had been used by militants to make rockets. In Washington, thousands of people took part in the White House Easter egg roll today. They distributed about 16,000 tickets for the day-long event, and dozens of gay and lesbian parents turned out as well and got to attend. One gay man from Boston says his family did not encounter any problems, but he figures there were some parents who have some issues with him attending. Jerry Falwell not getting any help from the U.S. Supreme Court in the fight against a website with a nearly identical name as his own, but an opposite view on gays. The evangelist says a New York City man is improperly drawing web surfers to a site by using a common misspelling of Falwell in the domain name. A federal appeals court last year decided the man was free to run his website because it is intended only to, quote, provide a forum to criticize ideas, not to steal customers. Justices of the Supreme Court have now refused to take Falwell's appeal of that ruling. The man who ran the website, Christopher Lamparello, says Falwell is wrong to preach that gay people are sinners who can change. This is Air America Radio News.
good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Thanks for tuning in. For George Bush, I don't know how many of you go to the Air America Radio website and take a look at the little mini blog that we have on the main page right before this program starts. Practically all the programs on Air America Radio, as they are about to begin, there is a brief synopsis of what the program is going to be about, who the guests are going to be, yada, yada, yada. We very seldom have guests, and when we do, I very seldom mention the fact until the program actually begins. But I use my little space there to just put together a few comments, and it's always tied to the program that's scheduled for that night. And today's, or this evening's, comments, the little mini blog space, bring up the fact that George W. Bush may have some sort of, in my opinion, a homoerotic kind of fixation on Rumsfeld, because Rumsfeld, it's turning out that Rumsfeld is the real Svengali. We've been thinking it was George, Dick Cheney all this time. But who wants to emulate a guy that is going to croak any day, you know, have a massive coronary and go join the Angels? So George, Angels? So George has got to have somebody. You know, Daddy was always kind of beat down by Mom. Mom is the, in the Bush family, Mom is the, how to say this gently, the power. So George never, you know, George Jr. never really had a manly man, with the exception of his mother, and that gets all confusing. To lead him and guide him and offer those things that fathers offer to their children, both boys and girls. You know, we all know that. Mom offers something. A rational, undisturbed mom offers good stuff. A rational, undisturbed dad offers good stuff. But even if you have a good mom and no dad, or a good dad and no mom, it kind of gets, you know, out of kilter, out of balance. Jesus. Anyway, with the Bush, all this to just say, a light is beginning to dawn inside my empty head, and that is that George Bush, the reason he likes to play dress up, usually with military garb, the reason he likes to attack countries that have done nothing to us, the reason he likes to send thousands of people to early death, is because of Rumsfeld. George has something in his brain that tells him Rumsfeld is the man his daddy or mother never could be. And here comes Rumsfeld. It doesn't make any difference, you know, if the situation, as hideous as it is, requires 500,000 soldiers, Rumsfeld says 150, 150 will be. Why? Because Rumsfeld is all-powerful. He is a huge presence in George Bush's life. So what does Bush do? He acquiesces. Now, general after general, hell, now it's getting down to the junior officer corps. It's getting into, not necessarily, lieutenant colonels and majors are not, but you know what I'm saying. It's working its way down to the captain level, where people inside the military establishment are saying, this guy is ruining everything. He's killing us! That's not what war is about. War is about only going when it's absolutely necessary, and then, thanks to Vietnam, getting the job done and going home. It's gotten so bad that the Bush crime family has had to launch a counteroffensive in the American media, on television, in the newspapers, from high-ranking military officers inside and outside active duty, who are now coming to the psychopath's defense, Rumsfeld, the psychopath's defense. But in the meantime, there sits George W., lost in a fantasy. He knew his dad was kind of a coward in World War II. He was an absolute coward when he had his chance to go kill the gooks, a drug-using drunk who just never couldn't do it. And along comes Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld, who can look you in the eye and smile as he orders sexual torture of people being held in Guantanamo. Incredible.
I will say, George's mom looks a little like Rumsfeld.
So that's kind of where we're at tonight. Poor George, you can't fire his Svengali, Donald Rumsfeld. So, I know, I'll fire Andy Card instead! And I'll bring in Josh Bolton to, why? I don't know. It's unbelievable. You know, I hate family dramas and Oedipal stuff and psycho and narcissistic interfamilial struggles and death grips and throat throttlings and kill mommy and get daddy and I got to have sex with mommy. No, I got to have sex with that. You know, I just hate to see that played out on the national political stage. Don't you? Especially when it results in thousands of people being slaughtered and the military being abused and misused the way it has not been abused and misused in, oh, I don't know what, 40 years? Just because George and his brothers and Poppy just couldn't quite overcome Mom. No matter how hard they tried. I'll take a savings and loan and tank it to the tune of $1 billion.
Didn't work.
I'll run real estate scams and Medicare phoning it.
Didn't work.
I'll go to Thailand and sleep with whores.
Didn't work.
I'll start a war.
Still didn't work.
I'll own a baseball team.
Didn't work.
I'll marry somebody that smuggles crap in from France.
Didn't work. None of it works. Mommy sits back there with her carved face and her stoic attitude. And somehow, some way, she just demands, you know, more death, more destruction. You haven't impressed me yet. How many did you kill today, George? 80? Nothing.
If Jeb was president, he'd kill 500!
How many did you kill last week?
200.
If Jeb was president, he'd kill 1,000!
You see how this works? This family psychodrama. Can't somebody get a huge broom and sweep these people off the stage? Christ, how much more of this do we have to deal with? Mommy and Daddy and Marvin and Jeb and George and who's the other one? Oh, God, Neil! Can't you people just go someplace else and play this game? There are Americans dying and Iraqis dying and Afghans dying and wars on the drawing table and wars in the drawers and nukes for God's sake about to be drawn out. Is that what it takes to get rid of mommy's horrible face telling you you're not ever going to be as good as daddy? Do you have to go nuke another country?
Saints for service! Can I get a priest in here?
You think I'm crazy? Don't you remember when Mother Bush said something about the death and destruction? And she said, why should I worry my beautiful mind with that? Oh.
So that's kind of the tone of the program tonight, Truth Seeker. I'm sorry to shriek at you at the beginning, but I've had enough. I've had enough of this family drama that is unbelievable. This would make the ancient Greek playwrights, you know, the ones who started all this, just stare in awe and wonder at the Bush family. It's unbelievable.
Mother, should I run for president? Should I trust the government? Mother, do you think they'll drop?
listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just two Aleve have the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
Hey, True Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you as alarmed as I am by the assault on our freedoms by the religious right? An essential element of freedom is the right to choose or reject religious beliefs. And this is why I fully support the Freedom From Religion Foundation as it takes the lead in challenging the growing threat from the religious right in the United States. If you'd like further information on the dangers of living in a theocracy, please call 800-335-4021. 800-335-4021 or visit their website, ffrf.org.
No doubt his hatred is mainly directed at us. After all, this is the guy that tried to kill my dad.
Yeah,
in his own words. All right, enough. 22 past the hour. Let me share an email with you, and then we'll get back to Rumsfeld. Rumsfeld is the topic here over the past 72 hours, 96 hours. I know there are supposedly more important things to talk about, but not really. When you have somebody who is driving a war that your country is involved in, a war that after 3 years, the top retired generals are now saying this is insane, then it becomes the overarching, overriding issue. I know, oil hit $70 a barrel today, $70 and change, and the average price is, what, $275, $285 a gallon now, and it just goes on, and this sick son of a bitch who used to run ExxonMobil, who, what did he make last year, $190,000 an hour or something? I don't know. But Rumsfeld and this Bush crime family is the focus for me, and especially because Rumsfeld is just sick enough and dead in the center enough to order the use of tactical nukes against Iran. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. 61 years since we, the only country in the history of the human race who's ever used nuclear weapons in a war. And we're about to do it again? This is from Ken Napo. And I use his name because, his full name, because he didn't indicate that he wanted me not to, and he's very active, apparently. He writes, Mike, as one who shares about 90% of your political views, I listen to your show with interest. This is particularly so when I want to vent against the theo-fascists who have taken over our country, without, in my opinion, having ever been legally elected. You're the best when it comes to venting against the Bush crime family. However, as one who has been active in the Jewish peace movement for almost 3 decades, I was extremely disappointed at your support on April 14th of the so-called one-state solution. Now, let me digress. I think what Ken is talking about is some comments I made last Friday. He goes on. The idea of a secular democratic state in which everyone would live in peace and harmony was the PLO's supposed position prior to 1988 when they formally accepted two states for two peoples. It was understood by them that the one-state solution essentially was meant to terminate the existence of the State of Israel. The Jewish people have waited 2,000 years to create a Jewish state. During this time, we have been subjected by others, primarily, quote, Christians, close quote, though also, quote, Muslims, close quote. We have been subjected by others to a history of pogroms, crusades, second or third class status, and finally the Shoah, Holocaust, as the world looked on and did nothing. Much like what is happening in Darfur today by Muslims to Muslims. The lack of self-determination of the Jewish people has been a disaster to both world Jewry and the world. Imagine the contribution those who perished in the Shoah could have made. While I have always strongly opposed the settlement policy since 1967 and the deliberate discrimination against the Arab minority, which goes directly against the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, which, while establishing a Jewish state, called for full participation by minorities, while I have been against the deliberate discrimination against the Arab minority and have for decades supported a Palestinian state living in peace alongside the Jewish state of Israel, the idea of a one-state solution is a prescription for disaster. Given the much larger Arab birth rate, it essentially has always meant, in theory, the call for the elimination of the State of Israel and replaced eventually by another country where Jews would be a minority, subject to the whims of a hostile majority. While I hardly feel that you are in the least a bit anti-Semitic, I think you got carried away with utopian ideas in endorsing the so-called one-state solution. I strongly suggest that you Google Geneva Initiative to look at the virtual peace treaty worked out by those Palestinians and Israelis who were seeking to resolve the conflict in Taba in the closing days of the Clinton administration. and who felt they were so close to a resolution that they should continue their work even without Clinton and Labor being in the government of the U.S. and Israel. They could at least show that peace was indeed possible, and that is precisely what they did. What is needed is mutual recognition of the national aspirations of both the Palestinians and the Israelis. If you want a realistic resolution of the conflict, Geneva shows the way. It is a real tragedy that the possibilities of such a solution were dealt a serious blow by the election of Hamas, which was directly facilitated by Fatah running three candidates in districts where Hamas ran one. Had instant runoff voting been in effect, Hamas never would have, quote, won, close quote, the election. The one-state solution will never be accepted by the Jewish people, which finally achieved national self-determination after 2,000-year disaster of the diaspora. Nor should it. Signed, Ken Napo. Don't let me down.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Okay, the question before the court is this. Who exactly eliminated the middleman? All right, we'll come clean. GEICO is guilty as charged. Yes, we did away with him, and we do it again. After all, when GEICO gives you the same great service as the other guys and could save you hundreds on your car insurance, getting rid of the middleman isn't really a crime. It's more of a public service.
Go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
The lies, incompetence, greed, and pure stupidity of the Bush crime family are all revealed in the game Impeached. Hi, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy, and if you despise this crime family like I do, you need to visit ImpeachBushGame.com and buy the only board game that's bold enough to tell it like it is. Go to ImpeachBushGame.com, buy your game, and check out the Bush, Satan Rove, and Deadeye Dick voodoo dolls. I've got my game, and I'm sticking pins in my Bush voodoo doll right now! So visit ImpeachBushGame.com and join in on the fun today.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
end your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
It's about 26 before the hour. Did you have a... How was your Easter? In so many parts of the country, it's just another sale day, right? Easter sale, Jesus Easter sale, Bunny Peeps Day. He's risen, but our prices have fallen, white sale, right? That sort of thing. Jesus Peeps and jelly beans. And Molly had a traditional Easter. She went out and gathered plastic eggs. Or no, they weren't plastic. Sugar eggs wrapped in some sort of clear plastic wrap. Probably toxic as hell, made by Dow Chemical, the plastic wrap. No, we don't let her eat sugar eggs. Oh, God, no. But they were very pretty. And we were about an hour and a half south of Atlanta. There's a place called Callaway Gardens, which is a huge, huge kind of resort area. Nothing fancy. It's set up for people who really like horticulture and azaleas and flowers and trails and walking and woods and... It was really nice. We had a good time. Spent a couple of days down there, rented a cabin on a lake. And after the Easter scrum on Saturday, which was a real hoot, it was fun. You know, people can be as cynical as they want, but when you have those little kids out, this is for the toddlers, you know, they had to be under the age of three, I think, and you have these little kids all waiting, you know. And here's a huge enclosed area. It's enclosed by a piece of Crime Stopper tape. And, you know, about, I don't know how big it was, maybe 50 yards by 30 yards. And inside they've put like 20,000 of these plastic-wrapped colored eggs. And the kids, you know, the little kids are standing, look at this, and got their Easter baskets, and they're waiting 10, 9, 8, 7. And then, you know, they have this huge Easter bunny person come out, all dressed up. Most little kids ran screaming in terror, you know, from this. Here's this huge walking rabbit, you know, just like, ah. And then they had a woman there on stilts, which is even freakier. She was about 12 feet tall. Little kids look up and just run to mommy and bury their head in mommy's lap and just shriek and scream, you know. And the daddies are trying to, come on, come on, we're about to start, come on, come on. But it's, you know, finally, bang. Well, they just counted down, blew a whistle or something. I don't even remember. I was running the movie camera. And so Molly and you know, 700 other little kids head out into this kind of semi-enclosed area. And Kathy went with Molly. But, you know, parents go with the little kids, you know. It's on the theory, I guess, that the kids can't see these iridescent colored plastic-wrapped eggs, candy, sugar clots lying on the grass. But anyway, so it's just absolute chaos for about 10 minutes. That's all it takes. These little kids, these little toddlers, huh. You know, the Iranians, I hate to say this, but the Iranians used young kids to go through the minefields when they were fighting with Iraq to find the mines, and not to find them and bring them back, but to find them and set them off. Remember that? So, oh, jeez, why did I say that? So, anyway, all these little kids are out there running around in this egg field, gathering in the colored eggs, and so Molly comes back, and she's got like 10 or 12 of them. And, with you know, she doesn't understand any of this. She's 21 months old, for God's sake, but it's fun. And after that, then we went to a safari land, wild animal place, where, you know, you go buy your ticket, and then you get on a safari bus. It's an old school bus kind of thing. They got about 20 of them here, and they're all painted white and black like zebras, and the windows are taken out, but they have bars across they have bars across the windows, sort of. You can reach out as far as you want to, but then go into this huge, what, 500-acre, 1,500-acre game preserve where all the animals are just free to, you know, do whatever they do. Now, they're mostly grazing animals. They do have a few lions and tigers and bears, oh my, but they're kept in a separate part. So we're out on this bus with other mommies and daddies and kids. And an obviously drunk bus driver who just, look over here, you see the bison? Come here, you little bison bastard, get over here. Come here. And we all have these huge bags of animal food to feed, you know, that we have to buy. It's, you know, a big sack, big brown sack of pellets about the size of your thumb. And so the animals come up. Oh, I know. A lot of people are listening and go, oh, Jesus, that's cruel. I really don't think so. Any animal out of its natural environment, that's cruel. I agree with that. But a huge 500-acre, it looks like a savanna out of Africa. And here all these animals just wander free. Now, of course, it's enclosed way, 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 way back in the areas where you can't see. I'm sure there are electric fences and all kinds of poisonous moats and people with high-powered rifles in case any of these animals want to try to escape. But as long as they're good animals and just wander the savanna, everything's cool.
Actually, I think they said it was 3,000 acres.
Oh, is that how big? Okay, well, 500, 3,000, who knows. So we get out into this thing on the bus, and you know, there's all kinds of warnings. Watch out, because you know these are not house pets. And so Molly was just shrieking from joy and weirdness. I mean, she couldn't believe it. She's been to a couple of zoos, like here in Atlanta, down in Tampa, where you know it's a natural habitat. Again, it's a zoo, and I'm just automatically opposed to zoos. I really am. I figure if Molly's ever going to see lions, okay, I'm going to have to take her to Africa. But anyway, so here we are. And has this gotten boring yet? Okay, well, tough. It's my program. Switch stations. I'm almost done. So I just think Molly had a traditional Easter, you know, gathering in sugar eggs and then going to feed buffalo, or bison, as the drunk driver said. Yeah, there's your bison over there. So these animals, you got camels, dromedaries, deer, buffalo, huge horned Indian cows and bulls and zebras and giraffes and these combination animals. It was like Dr. Moreau's Island or something. They had animals that were half zebra and half horse, and they had something, I don't know what the hell it was, but, you know, kept trying to swim through the dust. You know, it was just kind of gruesome, kind of scary. And they had ligers. You know what a liger is? Combination lion and a tiger. Huh? It was just kind of freaky and weird, and Kathy and I were just like, oh, my God. But Molly, if you've got a two-year-old or ever had a two-year-old, you know what I'm talking about. You know, these animals come up, and they stick these huge maws up against the bus, you know, the safari bus, and they open these huge, and, you know, some of these grazing animals have tongues that are like 6 feet long. And Molly had a fistful of these pellets, and she just couldn't wait, just stuffing them down these animals' throats, and the animals were just and coming back for more. But I've never quite seen anything like that. I never took any of my adult children when they were babies. I never took them to a place like this before, and it was just bizarre. But we've destroyed it now for Molly where it concerns zoos. She'll never be able to go to a zoo. I don't care if it's one of these modern natural habitat zoos or not, because as far as she's concerned, now she's seen them all in their natural thousand acre environment. Of course, most of them, most of the animals, I'm sure their heads are just rotted. Their brains are rotted now that they think that the way they eat is wait for the black and white bus to come. Or one of 20 black and white buses to come, or little vans, if you want to spend a little more money. You can ride the bus for free. If you want to rent a van where it only takes 6 people, it costs, I don't know what it costs, because we didn't do that. We took the free bus. But, sure, it's all screwy and messed up and terrible. There should not be zebras in South Central Georgia. I understand that. But, what the hell? Zebras are soon going to all be dead, and so will camels and dromedaries, and probably ligers and tayans. I can't believe that they breed ligers and pions.
You know, it just occurred to me listening to this that people out there in the audience are going to think that you're just crazier than Donald Rumsfeld, that none of this is true, and that you just went on some long Easter weekend bender and
No.
I mean, it really, I just want to verify for the audience.
It really happened.
This really happened. Molly had a great time, and it's called something like Wild African Safari, and it's right outside of Pine Mountain, Georgia. Kind of between Warm Springs and LaGrange. And if you've never been there, it's cheap and it's fun, and your kids will love it.
And the other thing we did while we were down there, of course, was to go to Warm Springs, the summer White House for FDR, and took a tour and got to see the bed he died in. Oh, now that was fun. But there's a huge rehab. There must be 10 different hospitals down there, all sorts of rehabilitative medicine in Warm Springs, Georgia, which was originally set up as rich person's place to go for the Warm Springs, literally. And it's where FDR died, of course, in, when was it, 48, 47? No, 44. It was about, I don't even remember. I know the bomb was dropped. Truman had to authorize the bomb in 45, so it must have been early 45 when FDR died. Anyway, I just tossed that out because if you've got kids, you had an Easter, and so we did. I just didn't want everybody to think that we're total, you know, atheistic freaks. You know, well, we are, but you know, at least we did something. We honored this huge 7-foot-tall white rabbit. I kept thinking about two things. I kept thinking about Jefferson Airplane, and I kept thinking about the Broadway play Harvey. It was just bizarre. And then to go out on the African savanna and huge beasts coming up, you know, it was just great. It was great. And then going to FDR's birthplace, or not birthplace, but death place, and then watching the moon come up that night. It was a nice Easter. Thank you very much.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
The point of commercials is, of course, to get you to do something. For example, we'd like you to go to Geico.com and get a free rate quote. But if you're still not reaching for your mouse, at least do this for me. Call a friend who has Geico and ask some questions. Can Geico really save me that much money? Is their claim service as good as, well, they claim? Are they really available 24/7? Once you get your answers, we'll be right here.
Go to Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
kill makes you small.
I know the governor likes to hunt rabbits. Sometimes those rabbits think they can hide from the governor. But eventually he smokes them out and gets them. And that's exactly what's happening to Mr. Bin Laden.
Oh, Jesus.
When she's 10 feet tall. And if you go chasing rabbits.
It's about 9 before the hour. This is from, have you all been to cumarmageddon.blogspot.com? Have you been there yet? cumarmageddon.blogspot.com. You've heard me mention this site a couple of times. I like the writing there. This was the last paragraph from the latest post at that site. And the writer says, I spent my Easter getting crucified at the gas pump. Today I paid $3.03, actually $3.04 when you round up, for regular. I put $10 worth of gas in my car and then nailed myself to the pump. I remained there until the cops arrived and gave me a summons. I was thinking of having a friend nail me to the larger sign by the roadside that states the insane gas prices. I could hang right there in the middle, letting my head droop to my chest as the blood squirted from my hands and feet, telling of the agony of such outrageous prices. I thought it was fitting. We got as far as putting me in a loincloth and gathering the required crucifixion materials, hammer, nails, ladder, gallon of vodka, and thorny crown that we made from the beef jerky purchased at the gas station mini mart, but decided against it when we witnessed how flimsy those gas station price boards really are. I wouldn't want the board to collapse into traffic while I'm nailed up there wearing only a loincloth and a beef jerky crown. So we returned forlorn to the bunker where we proceeded to drink all the vodka through improvised beef jerky straws. I'm still wearing the loincloth. Well, different people have different ways of acknowledging that particular day.
I wonder if anybody watched the A&E special on Easter. We missed it.
God or the girls?
God or the girl.
Or the girl.
Yeah, with the guy nailing together his 80-pound cross. That's some devotion.
I can't even think about that. All right, we're about ready for a break here, and then we're going to come back and take your phone calls. I mentioned this Friday about Salon reporting on the new evidence that Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld was, Salon's word, intimately involved in prisoner abuse at the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center. According to a December 20th, 2005, that's last December, Inspector General's report on Major General Jeffrey Miller, the former commanding general in charge of Gitmo, Rumsfeld approved an interrogation plan for Muhammad al-Qahtani, the alleged 20th hijacker. In a sworn statement to the Inspector General, Lieutenant General Randall Schmidt described Rumsfeld as personally involved in the interrogation, and said the Defense Secretary was talking weekly with General Miller. Rumsfeld developed an interrogation plan that required the Gitmo detainee to, quote, stand naked in front of a female interrogator, where he was then accused of being a homosexual, forced to wear women's underwear, and to perform dog tricks on a leash, end quote. Schmidt said that the open-ended policies Rumsfeld approved and that the apparent lack of supervision of day-to-day interrogations permitted the wide-scale abuse to take place. The report contradicts Rumsfeld's earlier statements. Here's one. People down there at Guantanamo under the president's orders have been treated humanely, and they should be treated humanely. There's no torture going on down there, and there hasn't been. He said that June 21st, 2005. On January 22nd, 2002, prior to the invasion, but we still had prisoners there, Rumsfeld said, and let there be no doubt, the treatment of the detainees in Guantanamo is proper, it's humane, it's appropriate, and it is fully consistent with international conventions. No detainee has been harmed, no detainee has been mistreated in any way. Okay, let's assume that Rumsfeld's telling the truth. Then that gives a horrific peek into Rumsfeld's twisted id, does it not? And this thing, what is this thing with conservatives about males, about women's underwear? What is it with conservative males that that they feel that the way to humiliate another male is to force him to wear women's underwear? Now, they even tried this on what's her name, the talking kite,
Ann Coulter Geist.
Yeah, Ann Coulter. They made her put on women's underwear, and she freaked. She absolutely freaked. But what is it with Rumsfeld and Cheney and these generals that, I mean, what does this mean? Will somebody, is this what the Japanese did on the Bataan Death March? Is this what the Germans did when they rounded up a bunch of Italian partisans? I don't know. I don't completely understand the world of torture. But women's underwear and accusing them of being homosexual. What is wrong with these people?
Have you ever worn high heels and a corset? Man, that is torture.
You know,
you don't. I mean, you just don't know.
Well, okay. It maybe in a metaphorical sense it is, but the plan that Rumsfeld developed, that the males would be stripped naked in front of a female interrogator, accused of being a homosexual, forced to wear women's underwear, and to perform dog tricks on a leash. Come here, Fido. Come here. What is wrong with these people? Whatever happened to just taking a pair of needle-nose pliers and pulling somebody's fingernails out? You know, at least that was just right to the point. Hey, come here, you dumb bastard. I'm going to torture you. And now it's wear women's underwear, be accused of being a gay, and do dog tricks on a leash. And this came right out of this sick son of a bitch Rumsfeld's mind. Think about that for a second, Truth Seeker. Well, not too long. We'll be back. This is Air America.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just two Aleve have the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
My name's Rachel, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
I'll start drinking in middle school, and I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
I'm Bill Crowley. Time is running out for taxpayers. Normally the tax deadline, of course, April 15th, but since that was Saturday, most people have till midnight tonight. But those in Washington, D.C., Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New York, and Vermont have until the end of the day tomorrow, because today's the official Patriots Day holiday in Massachusetts. There's also a break, by the way, for residents who live in any of the counties or parishes severely damaged by Hurricane Katrina. They have till August 28th to file their taxes. Another defense of the defense secretary, a former top commander, is saying he thinks some other retired generals just don't like Donald Rumsfeld's style and personality. The former deputy commander of the U.S. Central Command for Afghanistan and Iraq says Rumsfeld has a tough but, quote, very effective management style. Marine Lieutenant General Michael DeLong saying Rumsfeld is very competent but, quote, very dogmatic and tough when he deals with people. Rumsfeld himself today said he believes the public push by several retired generals to force him from office is going to die out. He spoke to Rush Limbaugh. Seven generals, including two with recent experience as division commanders in Iraq, have criticized Rumsfeld's management of the Pentagon and the war, and they say he should resign. A White House staff shakeup may be coming. New Chief of Staff Josh Bolton, intending to, quote, refresh and re-energize the personnel. He's invited anybody who's thinking of leaving before the end of the year, saying they should do so now. Spokesman Scott McCollum says no one was asked to resign during Bolton's first morning staff meeting. No one offered to either, but changes, they say, are expected. Political paralysis in Iraq, divisions hardening in the effort to create a new Iraqi government. A top official in a powerful Shiite party says that group will not drop efforts to make Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafri head of the new government. Sunnis and Kurds, though, oppose him, saying he has not stopped growing religious violence. Jane Fonda says she has too much baggage to join peace activists challenging the Iraq war. She says she wanted to do a tour like during Vietnam, but she says Cindy Sheehan is better at the anti-war efforts these days against the war in Iraq. And she says that she was asked to do a tour, but decided that it was probably better to just do her book tour and nothing else. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. The phone number here is 866-303-2270. If you would like to get some comments on the program tonight, we'd like to hear from you. Very quickly, while you're dialing, Matthew Rothschild wrote this last week at the Progressive, The Human Costs of Bombing Iran. He suggests we take a look at the human costs of dropping a so-called tactical nuclear weapon on Iran. He says the cost would be astronomical. The number of deaths could exceed 1 million. The number of people with increased cancer risks could exceed 10 million. That's according to a backgrounder by the Union of Concerned Scientists. The so-called earth-penetrating nuclear weapons could kill up to 1 million people or more if used in heavily populated areas, concluded the report. That report, by the way, was sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense. Physicians for Social Responsibility examined the risks of a more advanced buster bunker weapon, and it eerily tabulated the toll from an attack on the underground nuclear facility at Esfahan, Iran. PSR reported, quote, 3 million people would be killed by radiation within 2 weeks of the explosion, and 35 million people in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India would be exposed to increased levels of cancer-causing radiation. That's according to a summary of that study by the Union of Concerned Scientists. The Pentagon already has a stockpile of one such weapon in its arsenal. It's the B-61 Mod 11. That's according to Stephen Young, a senior analyst at the Federation of the American Scientists. Young says that this administration is considering using such a weapon against Iran is, quote, horrifying and ludicrous, end quote. But it is now Bush administration doctrine to be able to use such weapons. You've heard him say that with his own sick mind. The new national security strategy of the United States, which Bush unveiled in March, just about, 6 weeks ago, discusses the use of nuclear weapons in an offensive way, not defense. National Security Strategy says, quote, our deterrence strategy no longer rests primarily on the grim premise of inflicting devastating consequences on potential foes. Both offenses and defenses are necessary. Safe, credible, and reliable nuclear forces continue to play a critical role. Credible, safe. These sick bastards use the word safe and nuclear forces in the same sentence. And then finally, Walter Pincus, writing in the Washington Post last September, had an even more explicit version of the Pentagon's draft of a revised doctrine for the use of nuclear weapons. This draft by this crazy bastard Rumsfeld envisions using nuclear weapons for, quote, attacks on adversary installations, including WMDs, deep-hardened bunkers containing chemical or biological weapons. Close quote. It says the United States should be prepared to use nuclear weapons, quote, if necessary. And then it says if the United States used nuclear weapons against Iran, it would be violating the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which prohibits nations that possess nuclear weapons from dropping them on nations that don't. This is Matthew Rothschild's writing again. But in the Bush administration, planning to do this is just, quote, normal, close quote, behavior. And 1 million casualties or more? For Bush, that is evidently not a disqualification. It's astonishing, isn't it? All right, let's do some phone calls here. 866-303-2270 is the number. Lobo is calling from Chicago. Lobo, welcome to the program.
Yo, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm a little tired. I woke up Sunday morning for Easter service. I'm out around the crosses with the Reverend Lowry, and it was a beautiful thing.
Uh-huh.
And then I drove home, and I've been working. I'm on my second job now.
When do you sleep?
Well, maybe a little bit tonight. Yeah, we were trying to maintain security out there at the camp with a few threats going on now, so I slept about an hour a day out there.
Huh.
But it was a beautiful setup. Everything worked out good.
Anybody show up to harass the peace demonstrators?
Oh yeah. They, you know.
What do they say on Easter weekend? The risen Christ wants you to go kill people?
No. You had about 25 fake cowboys on horseback ride up, and one of them rode up by Juan Torres, who lost his son at I don't think his son was 18 yet when he was killed in Afghanistan. And if he was, he was just barely 18. And Juan says, Juan's standing out there along the roadway with everybody else lined up out there. And when they came down the road after all the Harleys came by revving their engines and huffing and puffing.
All right, Lobo, I'm going to have to restrict you from the program now for a good long time, because I appreciate what you have to say, but you know you can't talk like that on the air. You know you can't. So don't bother calling for about 6 months, all right? That's completely out of line, and you know it. Lynn is calling from Chattanooga. Lynn, welcome to the program. Hey, Lynn.
Yay.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Lynn.
Yeah, hi. Am I?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm calling about the stuff in Iran and some response to it and some way to get it to not happen. And I had this image of going outside and people dressed in, what do you call those, chadors, those outfits, those Iranian outfits, and women and children just, like even girls going outside and just screaming, I mean, standing outside, screaming and beating your breast, hitting yourself, that we all need to go out in the streets and not carry signs, just start screaming. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's around CNN or I don't care where, we have to do something. This is absurd.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, I mean, it was just this. I mean, I've been listening tonight. I've been driving. I've been on a long trip, and you know, I heard you talk about Molly and your Easter, and it's just nice to hear that. And I'm thinking all the time about people around the world and what we're doing. And then I thought, well, how do you respond to this maniac? And maybe it's what we need. I mean, I volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club, and my first impulse is to take all the kids and we'll go outside and we'll just start screaming.
Mm.
All right? And if we did that all over the country, it's full of school children and women. You know, I don't know whether you could get businessmen to do it, but maybe you could get groups of people to just, we pick a time and not stand outside with signs, but just, almost like the, you know, you see Middle Eastern people when they're grieving,
yeah,
they don't beat the breast or they're, you know, like, you know, wailing, you know, that kind of just teeming.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to do. This is insane.
Yeah, I hear you, Lynn. You're starting to break up, but thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Yikes. That would probably be very effective form of protest. As Lynn's describing that, I'm just trying to imagine that sort of a scene where people just stand in the streets and scream. I mean, she's right. What more effective response to people who are running the United States who are talking about using nuclear weapons? What do you do? I mean, what when the Congress doesn't respond, the Democratic Party doesn't respond, the Republicans are comprised of demons from hell, the Bush crime family is so far beyond any sort of response to the American public as to render the idea just completely insane. What do you do? What do you do? The military leaders never speak out until they're retired. So what do you do?
listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver Discount Prescription Card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health Discount Card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
Our weapons are de-alerted. They're not alert, however, it doesn't take them long to fire up if we need them. Our mission is to make sure we never need them on each other.
Jesus. 21 past the hour. Back to phone calls here. Will is calling from Michigan. Will, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, Will. Hi.
Hey, I couldn't hear you on the while I was on hold, so...
Yeah.
You caught me by surprise.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to comment about the price of oil going up.
All right.
I swear this war is just a subterfuge to as you know, for an excuse to keep oil prices high. I wouldn't be surprised if the royal family and Saudi Arabia is covertly funding the resistance.
Well, there's no reason whatsoever, except market manipulation, price manipulation, I should say, by the oil companies. There's no reason for oil prices to be high. There has been no interruption in the flow of oil, not for the past 3 years, not since the Iraq oil fields were hit. But that's been made up by other oil exporting countries, most notably Venezuela. Saudi Arabia has increased its daily production. You know, this is just absolute BS. This is ExxonMobil. This is the oil companies getting wealthy. This is Bush and Cheney and everybody involved with them. This is an outrage. I don't give a damn if gas goes to $10 a gallon, except for the fact that it enriches people who are hell-bent on destroying the planet, destroying everything I believe in, everything that any normal person believes in. And I just hate these bastards. I hate them for what they're doing. It's astonishing, isn't it?
Well, all I can say is I'm glad I've got a motorcycle. If this keeps up, I'm going to get a diesel vehicle and make my own biodiesel out of grease from restaurants.
Right. That's probably what we're all going to come to. Thanks, Will. I appreciate you checking in. I appreciate it. Take care. I mean, how much of these lies and deceptions are we supposed to swallow? Is there anybody in this country? Apparently there is, millions, who still don't understand why we have sent our military into Iraq and why the Bush madness now includes a plan, whether it's implemented or not, remains to be seen, to nuke Iran. Is there anybody left? Other than the millions of half-witted Republican Bush suckers who continue to follow this guy? Man. That's what it's all about. Terry is calling from Louisville. Terry, welcome to the program. Hey, Terry.
Hello.
Yes, Terry, welcome to the program.
Is this Mike?
Yes, it is.
Hey, buddy, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, welcome aboard.
Well, thanks. I was just wanting to call in. I know you've had David Ray Griffin on before. Professor is
right
on the 911 deal.
Right.
And I've read his book, New Pearl Harbor, and so on. And the lady just caught my attention and was called in, and she's wanting to go out the streets and scream. And I agree with her. I want to do that, and I scream every day myself. But we're still in that right-left paradigm, and we've got these people that are still pro-Bush, at least 36 or 38% of them. But I can't believe, Mike, that there's not a person on this planet that if they knew what went on 911 and who did it and how they did it, that they wouldn't halt this stuff immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just really like to want that everybody start getting involved in this and find out the truth and contacting people and quit being strangers and quit being shy about talking about it and listen to shows like yourself who has David Ray Griffin. Go to websites that David Ray Griffin has, like ST911, and find out these aren't just a bunch of nuts out here like they want you to believe, but these guys are structural engineers, PhD philosophers. I mean, there's all kinds of reputable, credible people that know that this was an inside job. And if you take the rung that you just take the supporting base for this out of it. I mean, if you prove that this guy is a murderer, in which he is, and the treason that's been committed that's led to all the Patriot Act and the reduction of the Bill of Rights and the stampede of the Constitution and the illegal war that we're in Iraq and the one he wants to put us in Iran and the use of nuclear weapons, this guy's nuts. And, I mean, he's certifiably nuts. And if everybody would just understand what they did and how they've gotten us to this point, then it will get people to get out on the streets and start screaming and not take this anymore.
Well, I hear you loud and clear, Terry, and I appreciate what you had to say. I believe that the 9/11 story is going to follow the same trajectory as the global warming climate change story has followed in this, especially in this country. You know, 20 years ago, we were warned that the temperature, the climate, the environment of the planet was going to be so drastically changed it would have profound effects. And ExxonMobil led the charge to say that's not true, and the right wing led the charge to say it's not true. And now it's happening. And I, as far as the attack on this country, engineered by or allowed to happen by this Bush crime family, I think it's probably going to take a very, very long time. People can't face it no more than they could face global annihilation from weather change.
Get screwed at the pump, so bring your Vaseline. We can't afford our gasoline.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control. First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags. And who is working on future safety innovations like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
No doubt about it, the Internet is a great place to hang out. Like blogging, for example. I love to blog. Maybe too much, when I think of all the hours I blogged. Anyway, you've probably spent a lot of time on the Internet, too. Isn't it time the Internet paid you back? Just 15 minutes at GEICO.com could save you hundreds on car insurance. Now that's what I call payback.
Go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
My name's Tyler, and in 9 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. But my parents won't start talking to me about it till high school.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
Thing is, my parents won't even see it coming.
So start talking before they start drinking. To learn more, go to StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. Let me just do a little bit of the quacking quackaroo here and then back to your phone calls. This is from the White House press briefing today. If you watched any of it, and I did, you know, we drove back from Easter Egg Land and Monkeyville, and we had to have something to reconnect us to the real world. You know, I mean, feeding animals and picking up Easter eggs is not the real world. The madness of George Bush is the real world. So I tuned into a White House press briefing, and here's part of what I heard. Reporter says, Scott, can you tell us about this morning's senior staff meeting? Were you surprised that Josh Bolton immediately signaled there would be more staff changes? And do you get the impression it's going to be a shakeup or cosmetic changes? Now, before Scott answers, I imagine the answer depends on how many upcoming indictments and war crimes tribunals we might expect in the near future, right? Or maybe they're trying to get the worst offenders out of the way for the upcoming midterm Democratic takeover of Congress to lessen the number of indictments. Maybe that's Josh Bolton's new strategy. He's a numbers guy, right? So anyway, here's the answer to the question. Do you expect major shakeup or cosmetic changes from Mr. Bolton?
I mean, there are a lot of rumors that go around at this time whenever there's a change in a chief of staff at the White House, and I think that's what those are, just rumors and speculation.
Quack, quack.
I think what Josh was saying this morning, well, first of all, let me back up. I mean, Josh has hit the ground running as chief of staff.
Quack, quack, quack.
And as you know, any White House goes through change. People decide to leave after they've served here for a while.
Quack.
It's hard work serving here at the White House.
Quack, quack.
So he said to the senior staff, and I think this will be passed on to others as well, is that if you're thinking about leaving sometime in the near future, now would be a good time to do it, because this is this transitional period. And so that's the way I would look at it.
Yeah, if you're thinking about leaving sometime in the near future, now would be a good time to do it before you face criminal charges, right? Looks like poor Josh Bolton might be the scapegoat that Karl Rove has selected to be the one to actually attempt to fire that crazy old son of a bitch Rumsfeld, huh, you think? This would keep Bush from the mentally impossible position of having to fire his own Svengali, his own homoerotic partner in this madness. Now, you listen to this Q&A and you tell me, is that the reason Andrew Card is out and Bolton is in, to take care of the Rumsfeld problem? Here's the question. Scott, can I clarify that point, though? When you say, you've said repeatedly, Josh has full authority, the president's authority, does that just cover staff? Does that cover cabinet posts or the entire administration?
The president is going to be looking to Josh for his advice and counsel, and the president has given him the full authority to do what he needs to do and what he believes is in the best interest of this White House and this president. We are all here to help the president advance his agenda. We have accomplished much over the last few years.
Quack, quack.
And there's much that we want to get done in the years ahead.
Quack.
As we, you know, 2.5 years is a relatively short period of time left.
Yeah, about 6.5, too long already. Scotty, if you ask me, you're insane. I'm not sure this nation can stand another 2.5 years of death and destruction and you sick bastard's definition of democracy. I don't know. But wouldn't that be an interesting turn of events, Josh Bolton brought in to fire Rumsfeld? Now, on the growing number of generals, retired generals, who are brave enough now that they're sitting on their bony asses and with a nice pension and endless golf, they're brave enough now to call for Rummy's resignation. Yeah, I know. They're not allowed to. There's no law that says they can't. And there's no law that says if they suggest it while they're active duty, it's insurrection or mutiny or revolt. There are ways to get the word up through the chain of command without the public ever knowing a damn thing about it. So while I'm certainly, from a political point of view, thrilled to see these guys go after the sick sucker Rumsfeld, I just wish that they would have done it when they were still active duty, don't you? Anyway, I wonder if Raisin Brain has Donald Rumsfeld confused with Donald Trump. Maybe Bush thinks he can't be fired. I don't know. You know, when you think about it, George W. Bush is the ultimate apprentice, isn't he? Still not ready for primetime anything, much less president. Oh, never mind. Here's the question. Scott, going to the generals who have been speaking out, I know the Pentagon put out a paper saying there are 8,000 living, retired, or active duty generals. 8,000! There are only two been on the ground in Iraq as division commanders and retired since then, and they've spoken out. They've told the president they don't think Donald Rumsfeld should stay, and that the president, despite what these commanders on the ground who have the experience there, who came out and made these comments, the president said he wanted Rumsfeld to stay. Is he telling these generals they're wrong?
No, what the president did on Friday was make a strong statement reiterating his full support for Secretary Rumsfeld. He talked about how Secretary Rumsfeld's energetic and steady leadership is exactly what is needed at this time. And there have been a number of generals that I think you've heard from expressing very similar views, generals that have worked very closely with Secretary Rumsfeld.
Oh, God. He talked about how Secretary Rumsfeld's energetic and steady leadership, more like pathetic and deadly, isn't it? It's amazing. They're standing there talking about military operations designed by someone who's never served in a combat situation, somebody who does not like advice from the military that has served in combat. I'm talking about Rumsfeld. You're talking about somebody who's completely enthralled to the Project for a New American Century and the psychopaths who advocate endless war. I'm talking about Rumsfeld. You're talking about somebody who listens to the voices in his head coming from the religious right. That would be Rumsfeld and Bush. And this is the person upon whom U.S. foreign policy, where it concerns the actual use of firepower, is based. And somebody who's, by the way, whose twisted view of the world includes personally designing torture methods, that includes dressing men up in lingerie and accusing them of being gay and leading them around on dog leashes. Does that sound sane to you? And this same son of a bitch wants to use nuclear weapons? What's he going to do? Put a bra on one of these bombs and send it hurtling through space on the tip of a cruise missile?
That's the Babs special.
Babs special. Last one from McClellan today. Reporter says, writing yesterday in the Post, Richard Holbrooke, the former ambassador to the United Nations, characterized the stinging criticism of Rumsfeld by the six retired generals as the biggest conflict between civilian and military leadership over a major issue since Truman fired MacArthur in 1950. So, Scott, what's your reaction to Ambassador Holbrooke's characterization?
I think that our views have been expressed when it comes to Secretary Rumsfeld. The president's made very clear where he stands, and he felt it was important to do so.
I am George Bush. I must support the Donald. I cannot resist. The Donald is giver of pain and delight. Must not stop war, death, killing. Am war president. Donald cannot fire the Donald. More Atavan. Now, Rummy, murder, death, kill, bomb, moon, known, unknowns, falling, wrenches, robot, wars, medication, 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 medication. Jesus, God. This is like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest without the humor. Medication, medication.
I thought they were saying meditation. That's why I got in line. Am I supposed to take these pills?
Medication, medication. Medication. I can't believe this stuff. Do you ever? I know most of you work during the day. I don't. But do you ever spend any time watching the press conference with McClellan, or the ones that are truly, truly insane? The Department of Defense briefings, when Rumsfeld gets up there with Pace. It used to be with Myers, but now he gets up there with Peter Pace. Peter Pace, pick the peck of pickled peppers. He gets up there and hits the podium over and over and over and over and over again with this madness. This drooling, gibbering freak stands there. I'm talking about Rumsfeld. And I just wondered to myself, okay, I'm sitting here watching this. Is Bush watching this? Is Bill Clinton watching this? Who's watching this? It's madness. Madness. Madness.
Quack, quack, quack. He led the others with a quack, quack, quack. From the river they would come, wibble wobble, wibble wobble, ho hum hum. But the one little duck with the feather on his back, he led the others with a quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. Quack, quack, quack. He led the others with a quack, quack, quack.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
He's in the jailhouse now.
I gave the people in Afghanistan a choice, but they didn't listen. They didn't respond. And now they're paying a price.
That is sick. It is so sick to put it that way. I gave the people of Afghanistan... You didn't give the people of Afghanistan a damn thing, you psychopath. But for someone to make a statement like that... Now what? I gave the people of Iran a choice, and they didn't listen, and now they're paying the price. I'm going to nuke the sons of bitches. I don't know how this happened. Well, yeah, I do. I got an email here from Spitfire, who is one of the pillars over at the message board at MikeMalloy.com. Spitfire's been posting over there for, what, Kathy, 5 years? Forever. Deeply indebted to people like Spitfire, who post over there. Spitfire writes, "Let's not forget that before the invasion, Saddam was trying to get the sanctions lifted. He wanted to sell his oil on the open market so he could rebuild his country. He was doing all he could to portray himself as a nice guy. He let in the inspectors with no conditions. He provided all the documents related to WMDs that showed they were all destroyed. As far as the Bush crime family is concerned, Iraq is a complete success, since Iraqi oil would have flooded the market with untapped supplies and driven the price down. The goal of the invasion was to keep Iraqi oil off the market and to use the violence we created to drive up the price. Saddam also was talking about trading in euros instead of our dollars. He had to go. And by the way, just prior to all this current invasion using nukes talk started, Iran was considered trading in euros too. $70 a barrel for gasoline. Okay, if you really figure unreported or the costs of using oil in our food supply and our energy supply and our every place that we use oil. Jesus, is there any aspect of American production that doesn't use oil or any production, whether it's textiles or plastics or whatever? If you figure that cost in, which I can't do because I'm not that smart, but I bet you the cost of a barrel of oil would not be $70. I bet it would be $300 or $500. And then when you factor in the absolute destruction caused by the internal combustion engine or coal-fired plants or oil-fired plants or any plant that uses these kinds of energy sources, then what would the price be? $1,000 a barrel? $10,000? Incalculable? What's the price of extinction? Mary writes, "Mike, since 2000, my daughter has traveled to Iran 3 times. She's a professor of Islamic art at a major university and has created a soon-to-be-launched Persian manuscript website for the Library of Congress. She is painfully aware of the dangers of her upcoming trip to Tehran, but somewhat naively assumes that scholars are sacrosanct. Her experiences in Iran have filled her with respect and affection for her Iranian colleagues. They have been hospitable, delicately refined, and erudite, and painfully aware of the oppressive political environment in which they and my daughter must operate. My stomach churns when I imagine the certain human toll of a Bush nuclear attack on this proud and ancient nation. Beyond the bloodthirsty massacre will be the disappearance of architectural and artistic treasures such as glorious Isfahan, a World Heritage City. No one knows how many precious artifacts and sites have already been forever lost in Iraq. Just as in Orwell's 1984, our current inner party is determined to destroy history. Will no one stop these barbarians?" From Marion, Denver. It's incredible. What is incredible to me is that we, or I, am sitting here thinking about, reading about, and talking about tonight a president of the United States seriously considering the use of nuclear weapons against a country that has done not a damn thing to the United States. Oh, it may have provided funding for Hamas, which really pisses off and kills a lot of the Israelis. But since Harry Truman made the decision to drop two nuclear weapons on a country against whom we had been at war for 4 years, 3.5 years, a country that originally had attacked our territory, and here we sit 62 years later, and a man with all the intellectual curiosity of a sack of hair cuttings has the power to designate his psychopathic Secretary of Defense to in turn order the United States military to use nuclear weapons against a country that has done nothing to us, whose only desire to develop nuclear weapons or a nuclear program comes from the time of the Shah of Iran in the 70s and 80s, when the United States of America insisted that they start a nuclear program. And here I sit talking about, engaging a conversation with otherwise intelligent people like me who sit here and can discuss the whys and wherefores and maybes and possibilities of a president of the United States ordering a nuclear attack.
Malloy on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old, and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really works.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser. Pentagon Chief Donald Rumsfeld thinks the controversy over his leadership will blow over. At least six retired generals recently called for Rumsfeld's ouster, saying he made strategic mistakes in Iraq. Speaking on a radio talk show, Rumsfeld said this too will pass. Late last week, President Bush expressed unqualified support for Rumsfeld, saying his energetic and steady leadership is exactly what is needed. Later today, Rumsfeld will meet with defense analysts and commentators who regularly appear on television news shows. Vice President Dick Cheney paid a visit to Fairchild Air Force Base in Washington State Monday to thank military personnel for their sacrifices. Addressing the troops, Cheney praised them for their continued service in the war on terror.
The work carried out by this team is helping to sustain the U.S. military in the global war on terror. That war goes on. Thanks in part to all of you, it's a war we are going to win.
He warned that terrorists strike when their targets are weak. He also warned that terrorists would not hesitate to strike the U.S. again if they perceived weakness. Earlier in the day, Cheney attended fundraisers for local Republican candidates in Washington state. New Jersey's two Democratic senators are taking different stances on the nuclear situation in Iran. Glenn Schuck reports.
The possible Iranian nuclear threat has New Jersey senators divided. Senior Senator Frank Lautenberg says President Bush's intelligence cannot be trusted.
There were lies and there were deceptions and fabrications about what was there. So we have to be very cautious. B is that we don't have, in my view, the capacity to take a military strike.
But Menendez, who did not vote for the war in Iraq, says when it comes to Iran, there is a clear threat. I didn't vote for the Iraq war because I did check out the facts, and I didn't see any clear and present danger or imminent threat of weapons of mass destruction. But I got to be honest with you, Iran is, I think, a serious concern for us. Glenn Schuck, Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Former Illinois Governor George Ryan has been convicted on all charges in his federal corruption trial in Chicago. Ryan and his co-defendant, lobbyist Lawrence Warner, were convicted of racketeering and mail fraud. Ryan was accused of giving lucrative state contracts and leases to Warner and others. Ryan maintains his innocence and says he will appeal. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
picture the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
It is 7 past the hour. Very quickly here before we go right back to your phone calls, a couple of quick emails. Sue writes in, Mike, it seems that yesterday that the D.C. press corps dubbed Rumsfeld a matinee idol. He was ever so sexy, said the press corps. Rummy cracked jokes while the Pentagon press corps laughed on cue and the blood flowed. The good old days. Yes, indeed. Yeah, Sue, thanks, Sue. Yeah, that. Did you remember that? A debate about this murderous son of a bitch, whether or not he was sexy. Republican women just got all excited whenever he walked past. Who was it, Kissinger said that power, or was it death, is the greatest aphrodisiac? Rumsfeld, the rock star. That's the kind of garbage that was written by the scribes, by the TV newscasters about this degenerate old bastard who has sent thousands of people to their graves. Sexy, a rock star. We live in a real sick country. This comes in from Turo. Start practicing our Peter Finch, Turo writes. Until we start screaming at our friends and acquaintances about the horrible nuclear consequences of a nuclear strike on Iran, nothing will change. If John Doe doesn't bring the subject up at the water cooler, at church, at the bus stop, while shopping for shoes or batteries or cars, everywhere he can, then we deserve what we get. George Bush is clearly mad. And we have to point this out at every possible opportunity. Just say to your friend, I don't want to die of leukemia or multiple cancers from radiation. Do you? This will at least start a conversation and give you a chance to express yourself. Maybe, maybe not, Toro. Maybe if you bring that up to the wrong person, they'll say, well, everything according to God's plan. So don't worry about it. Back to your phone calls. Michael is calling from New Jersey. Michael, welcome to the program. Hey, Michael.
Hello.
Hey, Michael.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Heard a little feedback there. I have a question for you on this nuclear first strike against Iran.
Uh-huh.
Was curious. This seems more like a long-range policy item. I was curious, do you think that the Bush regime wants to go out with one, to excuse the pun, last bang, or do they know something about the 2006-2008 elections that we don't?
Could be neither or both. One of the streams of consciousness that deeply influences the Bush crime family is Christian Dominionism slash Armageddonism. There's a strong faction inside the policy-making organ of the Bush crime family that really does believe that Christ's return to Earth is at hand. All it takes is a huge pile of corpses, maybe 80 million, maybe 150 million, and the deaths of all the Jews, the ones that won't convert to Christianity, of course. So that faction exists within the Bush crime family. There also exists within the Bush crime family a group like Rumsfeld, whom I don't believe is the least bit religious or the least bit spiritual, who is, in my opinion, acting out some sort of inner drama that has to do with his own mortality. And I guess Rumsfeld may be one of those types that, like Hitler, figures, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going to take as many millions with me as I can. I realize that's not a very strong answer in terms of geopolitical strategy, but that's the best I can do.
Okay, see, I'm looking at it that for whatever they do here in their long list of crimes,
uh-huh.
If in 2008 we get a non neoconservative government in place,
mm-hmm.
this regime is going to be held accountable by investigation and courts, both domestic and the world court.
Well, that's what we hoped. That's what we hoped when the Reagan 2 years of Reagan administration ended. But there was an investigation about the slaughter of 250,000 people in Central America and the trading of arms to Iran for hostages, not the Iran run by the Shah, but the Iran run by the revolutionaries who, in a sense, overthrew the Shah. And what happened? Pappy Bush issued blanket pardons to 3 or 4 or 5, I forget the exact number, don't email me anybody, of the key players in the Iran-Contra affair. And as a result of those pardons, the deaths of 250,000 people, including peasants, intellectuals, farmers, carpenters, priests, nuns, an archbishop, all of that slaughter in Central America was effectively, the book was effectively closed on it. And that's exactly what will happen when Junior here finishes up his regime. There will be pardons of key figures, and there will not be investigations. There will not be hearings and tribunals, because it will be closed off for the rest of U.S. history, except maybe 100 years from now, some historian may dig around and say, well, what was this about? So I have no hope that justice will be served on these bastards. I really do not. I just don't.
Boy, that would be a sick world if they're not held accountable for it.
Well, it's a sick world that the people who engineered the slaughter of 250,000 Central Americans are still in positions of power in the United States government. People like Negroponte and Otto Reich and Bolton, the ambassador to the UN, and Elliot Abrams and John Poindexter. These vermin, these scum, these swine are in the deepest, Cheney, in the deepest bowels of U.S. government, continuing their activities. These are people who engineered the deaths of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of innocent people in Central America. So you say it would be unfair, a miscarriage of justice, or immoral. No, it would just be keeping the pattern going of how members of the Bush crime family have operated for 40 years. I'm sorry to be disillusioning, Michael, but, you know, the truth is the truth, isn't it?
Well, if this pattern continues, wouldn't that bring America, after 2008 and following, more of a fascist government instead of a democratic government?
Bingo.
Oh, don't do that. You scare me. I'd rather have them nuke New Jersey here. If that was the case.
I kind of hear what you're saying. Michael, thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call. I'm not trying to be all negative and creepy. You know, I'm as willing to get into avoidance and denial as the next person. You know, I've in so many instances in my life, I've just, the neighborhood of avoidance and denial is a very familiar neighborhood to me, okay? I think most of us have to do that in order to stay alive. And I've certainly used it when political situations have confronted me that have just seemed monstrously impossible, whether it was Nixon in Southeast Asia or Johnson in Southeast Asia, or Nixon in the Oval Office, or Reagan's madness, or the Central American slaughter, you know, avoidance and denial. How else are you going to live if you don't visit there occasionally? I mean, people who really survive and survive well live there. Like the head of ExxonMobil, that's the universe within which he lives, avoidance and denial. Just give me the money! Dig the oil! So I'm sorry to be negative. I really am. Nobody knows who's in it. They've been carefully selected by partisan appointees who themselves were not elected. They've built up
high-level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts?
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission. Creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls here. Alan is calling from Miami. Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine, sir.
It's a crazy night with all this stuff going on. You know, when I first heard about the Cy Hirsch story about the nuclear, tactical nuclear weapons, you know, some little spark inside of me said, well, now all the Democrats are going to stand up as a unit and say, hell no, we can't do this. Anyway, so the remedy that I see to do that is, as long as they think the answer is to go out there and just win another election just like it's any other year, nothing ever is going to happen. I know plenty of progressives, good-hearted people in the Democratic Party who keep believing. What I say is if en masse a group of them said, you know what, we're registering green, you vote, we can register now however we want, and what we do in November is going to depend upon what you do now. And I think only by threats will they ever learn.
Well,
will there be any chance?
I agree with you. On the other hand, I'm sorry. I guess I'm too old. I guess I've lost that thing that comes with youth that says, you know, throw caution to the wind and go for it. Because I am terrified to think of the Republicans getting in again, because you and I and hundreds of thousands of others who think like us go for a third party.
What I'm suggesting is not necessary. Well, I say you can register. You can still vote what you want to do, but the thing is they have to prove themselves. They have to do something. You say that, you know, if you're not going to stand up and say no to the nuclear threat, this is what's going to happen. You have X number of days to get it together and stand up for this country and for sanity.
Well, I clearly understand what you're saying. It's just that I don't know that threats. You know, who has it said, don't ever make a threat unless you're willing to follow through on it?
But if they're not going to do anything, it's all the same. If they're not going to stand up for us, it'll be just like the last 4 years.
Well, yes, you can make that argument. There's something incredibly non-threatening about passive Democrats, though, when you compare it to the absolute wild-eyed, murderous, mouth-foaming degeneracy of active Republicans. So,
somebody has to advocate for something positive, though.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely right. And I'm just about at the point that you're at to say,
use whatever tools. I think we should use whatever tools are available. And the fact that there is an organization and there is it's a political tool that you can use, that you can use at this particular time, because you can register. I mean, as long as they count on all of these good-hearted people going out there knocking on doors in November, and they don't have to do anything for it. Let's face it, for the last 20, 30 years, they've been counting on progressives to show up, and they've never given them one shred of evidence that there's a reason to. It's not just playing a dangerous game. I would understand what you're saying about that, but I think you can use the tool and say, I can register green tomorrow, and you can see massive change in registration tomorrow, and then what I do on election day is, it depends upon what you're ready to do.
Well, you make a good point, Alan. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. That certainly it makes sense. Certainly it makes sense. I guess it was the DeKalb County police officer that taught me the proper way to handle a pistol, who said, the variation of what I said in the conversation with Alan, but he said, you know, rule one, you never pull a gun and aim it at somebody unless you're ready to use it. And I've always felt that way about running a bluff, but I get Alan's point. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bluff. All right, good point, Alan. I hear you. Tassetti is calling from Miami. Am I saying your name right?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Perfect name. That used to be the ancient name for Sudan, believe it or not.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
When black people were there, I guess.
Well, welcome.
Not Arabs, quote unquote.
Yeah, I hear you.
And they're really black too. It's just that religious imperialism has set in, and they, one thing, they're Muslim, so therefore they're Arabs.
Yeah.
And that's what, and I really do believe that's what the main problem with the world. I mean, I'm a Rastafarian, and I was, because of Rastafarian, I had to go to Africa and visit. And what I saw there was that America has taught these people that doing it the Martin Luther King way is the idiotic way. Because when I talk to the students, they're like, wait a minute. South Africa gave up their nuclear weapons, and they get nothing. They're still in poverty. They still, you know, but yet, I guess Pakistan has nukes. India has nukes, and they get a lot of trade deals with America. Mm-hmm. Maybe our leaders are idiots. Maybe they should have nukes. And that's what the Bush administration really taught these third world countries, that, you know, if you don't have a big weapon, we ain't going to respect you.
That's an excellent point. Tissetti, I have to leave it there. We'll talk again. We're just out of time for this segment. But that seems to be an imperialist attitude, doesn't it? I mean, it makes perfect sense. And perhaps that's why Iran and North Korea and some of these countries have decided we've got to have a nuclear weapon to defend ourselves against the United States.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Before I almost died from a staph infection, I came close to losing my leg. Before I came close to losing my leg, I started living on the streets. Before I started living on the streets, I thought everyone wanted to kill me. Before I thought everyone wanted to kill me, I quit eating. Before I quit eating, I never felt so good. Before I never felt so good, I tried meth. End meth at drugfree.org/Michael. A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
Your picture-perfect lawn, suddenly destroyed by two types of insects. No matter. Backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created Complete Insect Killer, the only product that combines two chemistries to eliminate insects above ground, plus below ground for up to 3 months. Guaranteed. Time to kick back and relax? Not if you're a damaging pest. Bayer Advanced Complete Insect Killer. Better science, better results.
We'll be right back.
We have begun our beginning with tonight's reading of George Orwell's 1984, Part 3. Chapter 1. When we finished up on Friday, Julia and Winston Smith had been arrested, thought police captured them. They'd been separated and taken to prison. He did not know where he was. Presumably he was in the Ministry of Love, but there was no way of making certain. He was in a high-ceilinged, windowless cell with walls of glittering white porcelain. Concealed lamps flooded it with cold light, and there was a low, steady humming sound, which he supposed had something to do with the air supply. A bench or shelf, just wide enough to sit on, ran around the wall, broken only by the door, and at the end, opposite the door, a lavatory pan with no wooden seat. There were four telescreens, one in each wall. There was a dull aching in his belly. It had been there ever since they had bundled him into the closed van and driven him away. But he was also hungry, with a gnawing, unwholesome kind of hunger. It might be 24 hours since he had eaten. It might be 36. He still did not know, probably never would know, whether it had been morning or evening when they arrested him. Since he was arrested, he had not been fed. He sat as still as he could on the narrow bench with his hands crossed on his knee. He had already learned to sit still. If you made unexpected movements, they yelled at you from the telescreen. But the craving for food was growing upon him. What he longed for above all was a piece of bread. He had an idea that there were a few breadcrumbs in the pocket of his overalls. It was even possible, he thought this because from time to time something seemed to tickle his leg. It was even possible that there might be a sizable bit of crust there. In the end, the temptation to find out overcame his fear. He slipped a hand into his pocket. Smith! Yelled a voice from the telescreen. 607 mine, Smith, W. Hands out of pockets, in the cells. He sat still again, his hands crossed on his knee. Before being brought here, he had been taken to another place, which must have been an ordinary prison or a temporary lockup used by the patrols. He did not know how long he had been there, some hours at any rate. With no clocks and no daylight, it was hard to gauge the time. It was a noisy, evil-smelling place. They had put him into a cell similar to one he was now in, but filthily dirty, and at all times crowded by 10 or 15 people. The majority of them were common criminals, but there were a few political prisoners among them. He had sat silent against the wall, jostled by dirty bodies, too preoccupied by fear and the pain in his belly to take much interest in his surroundings, but still noticing the astonishing difference in demeanor between the party prisoners and the others. The party prisoners were always silent and terrified, but the ordinary criminals seemed to care nothing for anybody. They yelled insults at the guards, fought back fiercely when their belongings were impounded, wrote obscene words on the floor, ate smuggled food which they produced from mysterious hiding places in their clothes, and even shouted down the telescreen when it tried to restore order. On the other hand, some of them seemed to be on good terms with the guards, called them by nicknames, and tried to wheedle cigarettes through the spy hole in the door. The guards, too, treated the common criminals with a certain forbearance, even when they had to handle them roughly. There was much talk about the forced labor camps to which most of the prisoners expected to be sent. It was all right in the camps, he gathered, so long as you had good contacts and knew the ropes. There was bribery and favoritism and racketeering of every kind. There was homosexuality and prostitution. There was even illicit alcohol distilled from potatoes. The positions of trust were given only to the common criminals, especially the gangsters and the murderers who formed a sort of aristocracy. All the dirty jobs were done by the politicals. There was a constant come and go of prisoners of every description, drug peddlers, thieves, bandits, black marketeers, drunks, prostitutes. Some of the drunks were so violent that the other prisoners had to combine to suppress them. An enormous wreck of a woman, aged about 60, with great tumbling breasts and thick coils of white hair, which had come down in her struggles, was carried in, kicking and shouting, by four guards who had hold of her, one at each corner. They wrenched off the boots with which she had been trying to kick them and dumped her down across Winston's lap, almost breaking his thigh bones. The woman hoisted herself up Right, and followed them out with the yell of, "Effing bastards!" Then noticing that she was sitting on something uneven, she slid off Winston's knees onto the bench. "Beg pardon, dearie," she said. "I wouldn't have sat on you, only the buggers put me there. They don't know how to treat a lady, do they?" She paused, patted her breast, and belched. "Pardon, I ain't quite myself." She leant forward and vomited copiously on the floor. "That's better," she said, leaning back with closed eyes. "Never keep it down, that's what I say. Get it up while it's fresh on your stomach-like." She revived, turned to have another look at Winston, and seemed immediately to take a fancy to him. She put a vast arm round his shoulder and drew him toward her, breathing beer and vomit into his face. "What's your name, dearie?" she said. "Smith," said Winston. "Smith?" said the woman. "That's funny. My name's Smith, too. Why," she added sentimentally, "I might be your mother." She might, thought Winston, be his mother. She was about the right age and physique, and it was probable that people changed somewhat after 20 years in a forced labor camp. No one else had spoken to him. To a surprising extent, the ordinary criminals ignored the party prisoners, the pollets, they called them, with a sort of uninterested contempt. The party prisoners seemed terrified of speaking to anybody, and above all, to speaking to one another. Only once, when two party members, both women, were pressed close together on the bench, he overheard amid the din of voices a few hurriedly whispered words, in a particular reference to something called Room 101, which he did not understand. It might be 2 or 3 hours that they had brought him here. The dull pain in his belly never went away, but sometimes it grew better and sometimes worse, and his thoughts expanded or contracted accordingly. When it grew worse, he thought only of the pain itself and of his desire for food. When it grew better, panic took hold of him. There were moments when he foresaw the things that would happen to him with such actuality that his heart galloped and his breath stopped. He felt the smash of truncheons on his elbows and iron-shod boots on his shins. He saw himself groveling on the floor, screaming for mercy through broken teeth. He hardly thought of Julia. He could not fix his mind on her. He loved her and would not betray her, but that was only a fact known as he knew the rules of arithmetic. He felt no love for her, and he hardly even wondered what was happening to her. He thought oftener of O'Brien, with a flickering hope. O'Brien might know that he had been arrested. The Brotherhood, he had said, never tried to save its members, but there was the razor blade. They would send the razor blade if they could. There would be perhaps 5 seconds before the guard could rush into the cell. The blade would bite into him with a sort of burning coldness, and even the fingers that held it would be cut to the bone. Everything came back to his sick body, which shrank trembling from the smallest pain. He was not certain that he could use the razor blade, even if he got the chance. It was more natural to exist from moment to moment, accepting another 10 minutes' life, even with the certainty that there was torture at the end of it. Sometimes he tried to calculate the number of porcelain bricks in the walls of the cells. It should have been easy, but he always lost count at some point or another. More often he wondered where he was and what time of day it was. At one moment he felt certain it was broad daylight outside, and at the next equally certain that it was pitch darkness. In this place, he knew instinctively, the lights would never be turned out. It was the place with no darkness. He saw now why O'Brien had seemed to recognize the illusion. In the Ministry of Love, there were no windows. His cell might be at the heart of the building or against its outer wall. It might be 10 floors below ground or 30 above it. He moved himself mentally from place to place and tried to determine by the feeling of his body whether he was perched high in the air or buried deep underground. There was the sound of marching boots outside. The steel door opened with a clang. A young officer, a trim, black-uniformed figure who seemed to glitter all over with polished leather and whose pale, straight-featured face was like a wax mask, stepped smartly through the doorway. He motioned to the guards outside to bring in the prisoner they were leading. The poet Ampleforth shambled into the cell. The door clanged shut again. Ampleforth made one or two uncertain movements from side to side as though having some idea that there was another door to go out of, and then began to wander up and down the cell. He had not yet noticed Winston's presence. His troubled eyes were gazing at the wall about a meter above the level of Winston's head. He was shoeless. Large, dirty toes were sticking out of the holes in his socks. He was also several days away from a shave. A scrubby beard covered his face to the cheekbones, giving him an air of ruffianism that went oddly with his large, weak frame and nervous movements. Winston roused himself a little from his lethargy. He must speak to Ampleforth and risk the yell from the telescreen. It was even conceivable that Ampleforth was the bearer of the razor blade. "Ampleforth," he said. There was no yell from the telescreen. Ampleforth paused, mildly startled. His eyes focused slowly on Winston. "Ah, Smith," he said. "You too."
Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to the folks who made the program possible, Justin Yuen, Jason Isaac, and Vicki Hipple, who engineered the program tonight. Dee Neal is our associate producer. She answers your phone calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, archives this program. Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. And Catherine Bay is the executive producer. Thanks to everybody. Mike is calling from Santa Fe. Mike, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, different day, same old bleep, only worse.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when I think of George Bush, the little film clip that plays in my head is when Jim Carrey puts on the mask and says, "Somebody stop me."
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
And it seems like it's just, you know, full steam ahead, no matter even if it's 2% approval rating.
That's the part that's astonishing. Anybody who was still to some degree rational would take a look at these poll numbers and realize what the poll numbers represent. The poll numbers represent an absolute loss of respect and faith in this man's alleged leadership. And you'd think that he would take a look at that and say, well, maybe I ought to do something better. But no, you're right. If the 3% of the American public supports this psychopath, it's full steam ahead.
And, you know, the last guy that really railed against him was Paul Wellstone, and we saw what happened to him. And perhaps this is what's being held over the heads of people that would otherwise speak up. I don't know.
Well, I don't think that a lot of people share the idea that Paul Wellstone was murdered. Now, whether he was or not is certainly out there for folks to decide. But I think the people who would challenge Bush don't think about Paul Wellstone. I think what they primarily think about, these leading Democrats, is first and foremost, and always, their own political career and whether or not they can be beaten in the next election if they say Bush is a murderous son of a bitch and needs to be removed from office. If they say something like that, which is absolute truth, except for the son of a bitch part, they might be challenged, you see, by a Republican who would be given tens of millions of dollars by the Republican National Congressional Committee to run against that Democrat. So first and foremost is the law of survival in the Democratic Party leadership. Secondly is I wonder how many of them really, really, in their heart of hearts, believe that Bush has done anything wrong. You know what I'm saying? Because so many Democrats are not the kind of Democrat that you and I and millions of other people might still believe are Democrats. Like you want an example? Joe Lieberman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a point I can't even, at this point, I don't even know what to say. You know, it's back in the 70s, both the Doors and the Grateful Dead had songs called Ship of Fools. We could remember. But I really don't have anything more to say about it. It's, like I said, same old thing, just worse.
I hear you. Mike, thanks for checking in. I understand the frustration of trying to articulate just the frustration of trying to articulate the frustration. How's that? Very quickly here, Terry is calling from Dallas, Texas. Terry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mr. Malloy, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir.
I think you are the most intelligent and passionate white guy I ever heard on the radio, and I got a nickname for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Malcolm X had his name.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have to call you MMX2.
MMX2. Well, Malcolm X's nickname was Red.
Yeah, that was his street name.
That's right.
Yeah, but see, what everybody don't realize about Malcolm X, he was also nicknamed Devil.
Devil?
When he was in prison.
Is that right?
And the reason why is that, because Malcolm had such a distaste for this so-called Christian belief and faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because as he was growing up in a way with a lot of black during that time and through history, the so-called faith of Christ, the way they distorted it, the people in control, was really a mind control.
Oh, sure.
To keep them from raising up.
Absolutely.
And I stress this out. If everybody would just read something about Nat Turner, they would understand the whole ideal about slavery as it looks today.
That's a good point. Terry, we're flat out of time. What's my nickname again?
MMX2.
MMX2. I'll take it. I'll take it. Thanks, Terry. I appreciate you checking in.
Sounds like some sort of summer movie blockbuster sequel to MMX1.
Watch out. Watch out. That's my nickname now. MMX2. I'll take it. I'll damn sure take it. MMX2.
Can I be KBX1? I don't have to call you that at home, do I?
You still don't know how I knew that Malcolm X's nickname on the street was Red. You still don't know that. Just read the book, Autobiography of Malcolm X. Thanks a lot for participating tonight. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right? Take care. Watch your back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio.
Come on, use your street name.
Chuckles.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Patriot Seekers, the Republican fools put an idiot in the White House. Bush's war machine is bankrupting our country, and middle-class America is screwed again. Hi, I'm Mike Malloy, and it's time Bush and his cronies get what they deserve, and you can be the one to make it happen. Go to ImpeachBushGame.com. That's ImpeachBushGame.com, and get your revenge by sending a conservative criminal to federal prison or to the Iraq War. Impeached doesn't pull any punches, folks. And if you haven't ordered your game yet, go to ImpeachBushGame.com and do it today.
Your lawn's enemy, grubs. Their mission? To destroy your lawn. So, backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created season-long grub control with Merit, number one choice of professionals. No other formula kills more grubs, plus a single application protects your lawn for an entire season, guaranteed. To grubs, it's the end of the road. To lawns, a new lease on life. Bayer Advanced season-long grub control. Better science, better results.